We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From inside Camp Randall Stadium, Learfield IMG College presents Behind the Badgers, an exclusive look inside Wisconsin athletics. Here are your hosts, Patrick Herb and Brian Mason.
This is Behind the Badgers. I'm Patrick Herb. Brian Mason is with me. We are recording a day late because I was in Sioux Falls, South Dakota until 3 in the morning last night with the basketball team. So thanks for finding us, even though we're a little bit delayed. There's snow outside. It's November. Brian, it's trophy season.
This feels like Big Ten football.
That's right.
This week,
let's get back into Big Ten football talk. Football team's going to get back on the right tracks. Hoops started. There's a big reunion weekend coming up this weekend with the 1999-2000 Rose Bowl. We got a lot to cover. And speaking of that, we had one of the heroes, one of the icons of that team, Chris McIntosh, in the chair for an interview. Fascinating conversation.
Really, really good stuff from him. Some great stories from those teams.
Yeah, and one in particular that you have to listen to is he tells us the best compliment he ever received as a football player, and it came from an opposing player during the Dane game against Iowa. But that's not it. We get into his feelings about Ron Dane not officially having the NCAA rushing record. He has feelings, let's put it that way. We also talk about some of the things that he's into these days as the deputy athletic director at Wisconsin. So he's Barry's right-hand man, and this is an interesting time to be working in administration in college athletics. And we talked to him about that with the name, image, and likeness and everything that's happening in a sort of uncharted territory.
It's a rapidly changing environment.
Yeah, but thanks for checking out our podcast. Please subscribe. If you have a moment, feel free to rate us. We love hearing from you, feedback. We've got an email address, behindthebadgers@gmail.com. You can get us on Twitter also. Please follow us at behindbadgers. Let's get into our trending topics right away. Brian, trending number one is that football is back. After a bye week, Wisconsin hosts Iowa, and they're getting back in a big way. This is a huge, huge game Saturday at 3 o'clock at Camp Randall.
It's hard to find a more meaningful stretch of games for the Badgers that they're going to face here in these next 4 weeks. And it starts with an Iowa game that, for all intents and purposes, will decide which of these two teams has a shot to continue on and contend for the West Division title.
Yeah, in a way, it's a playoff game before the playoffs, essentially, because, like you said, the loser is probably out of the West Division race.
There just aren't enough games left. And Minnesota enters this weekend two games clear of Iowa and Wisconsin, and they've got a challenge in Penn State, but after this week, Iowa and Wisconsin both have only three games left, and Minnesota enters two games clear of them. You're just running out of chances to try to play catch-up, so this one's huge.
We talked about it last week that Wisconsin, they need help now. Wisconsin probably needs to run the table and then also have Minnesota lose a game, and like you mentioned, the Gophers will host Penn State, who is number four in this first CFP playoff rankings that came out. Really good Penn State. team. It's at 11 a.m. and the Badgers don't play till 3. So we will know the outcome of that before the Badgers kick off, which is interesting.
We will know the result. And I think either way, the one thing that it doesn't change is that this, we talked a second ago about the idea that it's time for Big Ten football. It's hard to get more Big Ten than Iowa, Wisconsin. I mean, this is,
it's a smash mouth.
Right. This is
run the football. In fact, whichever team runs the ball better wins this game.
That's been the barometer for this.
And
for
lately, that's been Wisconsin. The Badgers have won 6 out of 7 in this series. But if you look just before that, from 2002 to 2009, Iowa won 6 out of 8. So Wisconsin's got the bragging rights right now, but this has been a great series over the last few decades.
And the road team, in an interesting quirk in this series, the road team's won 7 of the last 8 meetings between these two games. Between these two teams. So,
but it's trophy season, I mentioned earlier. So Wisconsin plays, and 3 of the next 4 games are for trophies, and against Iowa, Minnesota, and Nebraska. They've been really good since having these trophies in place.
Absolutely. 19-2 since 2010. And you can go back to 2010 being a pretty pivotal game in this series with Iowa, because you talked about Iowa had gone on that sort of extended series of dominance going into that year. Wisconsin wins that thriller 31-30 in Iowa City. And since then, the Badgers have won 7 of 8 in this series.
Yeah, that one kind of set the tone for it.
6 of 7 in this series.
Yeah, but that game did set the tone, and it's going to be awesome. It's going to be really fun Saturday. It's always great when Wisconsin and Iowa get together, because it usually makes for memorable games, one of them being the Dane game from 1999 that we're going to talk to Chris McIntosh about. But I'm looking forward to it. Trending topic number 2, basketball season has begun. Last night, Wisconsin took a bump. They lost 65-63 in overtime to number 20 St. Mary's in a neutral site game in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Brian, you watched it on TV. What were your takeaways from it?
One positive takeaway I had is that Nate Reavers, we're looking for him to make a jump and become a key player for this group. And what he showed me last night is that he can fill that role. I'm interested to know, what did you learn up close from watching this one?
Yeah, on Nate Reavers first, there was a stretch in that second half where he carried Wisconsin and he fueled that comeback. And I think that he can be that alpha dog. He can be that next guy at Wisconsin that turns into that all Big Ten player, because they've had a great run of having the next guy waiting in the wings when someone graduates, whether it's Ethan Happ after Nigel, or Nigel after Frank Kaminsky, or Frank Kaminsky after Jordan Taylor. There's always been that guy. I think he can be that.
And I think we saw last night that it's when it's time to step into a new role or a bigger slice of the pie, it's not necessarily an automatic.
Like, no.
There will be growing pains along
the
way.
And that's what you probably saw out of Kobe King and Aleem Ford, that these are two guys that are ascending players, and they've had some really good moments already early in the season and some of the scrimmages and the exhibition games. But last night, it ratcheted up. That was a really good team that they were playing. So here were some of my takeaways. Wisconsin got down 9 with 7.5 minutes to go. That was a danger zone. I texted a few people that I was in communication with saying, like, uh-oh, like this is where this game goes one of two ways. It could get out of hand because Jordan Ford is a really good player. So you got a St. Mary's team that they might be the best team that they've had under Randy Bennett, and they've had good ones. They have an All-American candidate at the point guard. So this was a great test for a Wisconsin team that we think is probably going to have some growing pains trying to figure out who they are. So here they are, down 9 with 7.5 to go, and they rally back to force overtime. In fact, had the ball in a tie game with 20 seconds to go, and man, that's the situation you want. I was sitting there with a camera being like, this is great. We're going to get a walk-off buzzer-beating win here. It didn't happen that way, obviously, and there were a couple mistakes. And the big takeaway from a coaching standpoint and what was talked about in the locker room was the missed opportunities in a basketball sense, and how if Wisconsin plays Wisconsin's brand of basketball, which is playing smart and disciplined and tough and doing the things that have made this program so successful and so sustainable, if they do those things, they win that game. And that's, you can't have 14 turnovers. In a 2-point game, that's 14 missed opportunities at the basket. You're going to score at least a couple of those. It's closing out the defensive rebounds. They gave too many offensive rebounds.
14 second chance points for St. Mary's. That's huge in a 2-point game.
And some defensive mistakes that Coach Gar said that, they got to clean those up. They're breaking some of your rules. And when we broke the rules, we got burned for it. Another thing that was on display, I think, was a little bit of the lack of depth in that game, that Nate Reavers had to play a lot of minutes, and he was tired, and he was really good in that game. But, boy, you sure would have liked to see Micah Potter.
I was just going to say, not to beat a dead horse, but,
Oh, man. like the free Micah Potter sign right behind the Wisconsin bench.
Appreciate the fans doing all that
time on TV.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, we don't need to talk about that.
So,
right
now. So what now moving forward? Because this is an opportunity you had to get one early, a win that could really help you come March. You didn't get it. What do you learn out of this, and what do you take forward now as the season gets going?
Yeah, all things considered, that game won't hurt you. The alternative,
sure, losing the game won't hurt you.
The alternative to playing that game would be playing a team that's ranked number 300 in the rankings at home, you sure. know, and you're getting Prairie View A&M. Beating Prairie View A&M at home gets you is no better than losing to St. Mary's in a neutral site. So in the big picture, that game doesn't hurt you. There was more to gain than there was, but you, as the game unfolded, you're like, man, that would have been a great one to have. Could that win would have held up in March, where that's a quad one win on these net rankings? Because yeah. St. Mary's is going to be highly ranked all yep. season, especially when they get into the West Coast Conference and they start running through that league. So you missed an opportunity. But the good thing is Wisconsin's non-conference schedule is loaded this year, and they're going to have a lot of those opportunities. So I do think that you lose and you learn, and that hopefully they will do that and take a step forward, and we'll see on Friday. They have the home opener on Friday against Eastern Illinois. Tip-off's at 7 o'clock. If you're planning to come to this game, try to be there early. Try to be there like at least 10 to 15 minutes before tip, because the team's going to honor the family of Coach Howard Moore and do a couple special things pregame to recognize the family and also kick off a fundraising initiative to help support Coach Moore and his family. I think they alluded to it last night on the broadcast, or you might have seen some signage at the game last night.
Folks that watched on TV probably saw the number to text to donate. I thought that was cool that got a lot of airtime.
Yeah, but that's going to really launch in earnest locally in Friday, and Coach Moore and his family are going to need some financial support, because his recovery is going to be a long, long road back. So we hope to see you all Friday. This is going to be exciting. I think, I'm clearly biased, but I do think this is going to be a really fun team to watch. They had some really good stretches in that game against a really good opponent right out of the gate, and I think that was more valuable to them than beating a team by 30 at home.
Yeah, I came away impressed with St. Mary's as a defensive team. That was one of my takeaways. That
go like, back
you
and
can,
watch.
You can use this.
Go back and watch the final possession of regulation and how they defended that. Yep. You could question how what Wisconsin's did. Demetri Trice came off a high ball screen. They rotated, sent two guys at him. He found the open man. Aleem Ford was the guy that they doubled off of.
And, man, he got closed out on quick.
Yeah, but St. Mary's defended that possession as well as you can. Right. And Aleem Ford's shot was just off the mark. He'll have better days than he did last night. Trending topic number 3, alluded to it earlier, there's a big reunion happening this weekend. Brian, you're going to be intimately involved in all these guys coming back, but they're honoring the 1999 and 2000 Big Ten title teams and Rose Bowl championship teams. It's going to be really fun.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. And the turnout is stacking up to be great. About 100 people between players, coaches, support staff, and even student managers. There's 14 student managers that have signed up to be part of this reunion. So I'm hoping they'll make their way down to the McLean Center Friday when the current Wisconsin managers and Iowa managers play in the annual Rusty Toolbox game that they flag football
game. That's one of my favorite underground traditions.
Yeah, so that could be a pretty cool cheering section for the Badgers managers down there on Friday. But yeah, there'll be a Friday night gathering for everybody here at the stadium to kind of get together. And Mac will talk a little bit when we get into his conversation about the chance to see guys you haven't seen in almost 20 years in some cases. And then at the game Saturday, the groups will be honored at halftime. They'll come out on the field so the fans get to see them, and we'll sort of relive some of the highlights of those great seasons. And then also in between the first and second quarter specifically, Ron Dayne will be highlighted for the 20th anniversary of winning the 1999 Heisman Trophy. And not so coincidental, he broke that NCAA rushing record, which we'll get into the discussion of the validity of that record here in a minute. But he broke that record on November 13th, 1999 against the Iowa Hawkeyes. So a little bit of history there.
What are some of the names coming back this weekend?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, Chris Chambers, Brooks Bollinger, Aaron Gibson's going to be back. You can go down the list, and it's a who's who of greats from that team. But I'm sure as someone who was here during that time, there are names that specifically stick out to you, I would think.
Yeah, this team was like my formative Badger years. I was a student in school here at UW, was front row for all these games. And so I'm looking forward to guys like Mike Eccles. I loved Mike Eccles. Nick Davis, Nick Danger. He could catch a BB in the dark. That was a Dag Retzlaff, the tight end, John Sigmund, Cecil Martin. Like these are all guys.
Yeah.
These are names that make me smile, like thinking about these guys that are coming back for this one. Pat Gill, the Gill family, I'm sure will be represented.
Let's not forget Tom Burke. To tease a little bit of what you're going to hear from Chris McIntosh here in a minute, I want to know what Tom Burke's going to show up wearing.
Ahmad Merritt, Matt Money Davenport. I'm just looking at this list now, thinking about how awesome. Bobby Adamoff, Mark Anelli, Bobby Myers.
Yeah, Bobby Adamoff be one of
Rubles,
the
Vitaly Pasetsky. This is going to be fun. This is going to be great.
But it should be a blast.
You don't need to hear us talk about it. This is the first thing we dive into with Chris McIntosh. Let's get Mac's reaction to what this weekend's going to be like. He was an All-American tackle here. He was the captain of the back-to-back Rose Bowl teams. For the last 5 years, he's been working in UW's administration. He's Barry's right-hand man. He's the deputy athletic director, and his fingerprints are on everything that goes on in this athletic department. We're really honored that he would drop by our measly podcast for a couple minutes. I think you're going to enjoy the interview with Chris McIntosh. Mac, thanks for joining us on the podcast. It's great to have you on here.
It's a privilege.
Well, that's exaggerating, but this is an exciting weekend for all of us who are Badger fans. For you, it's going to be really fun to see a bunch of your teammates. What's your reaction when you see the list of all the guys that are coming back this weekend from that 99-2000 back-to-back Big Ten champions, back-to-back Rose Bowl teams?
Yeah, I mean, you know, just Patrick asking that question, I mean, I get goosebumps just thinking about it. There's just this wave of emotions. You know, there's a list of guys that I saw that are coming back, and there are guys that I haven't seen, you know, for almost 20 years now. You know, just the nature of things, people go on their ways and follow their career paths and just get taken in different directions. And these teams, there haven't been a lot of opportunities for this team or these two teams to come back together. There was a little kind of brief moment, I think, at the 10-year reunion, but it really hadn't been long enough. Like,
yeah.
You know, people are kind of getting in their lives and starting families and whatnot. And so it was a good turnout, but not a great turnout. We're going to have a great turnout this weekend. And, you know, there are guys coming back that are just, you know, icons here and what they did and what they meant to the program that I haven't seen in a long time. I mean, Mike Samuel's coming back. I think I've seen Mike Samuel once since we were done playing. And, you know, I saw him at, I think we were at the Sweet 16 in Philly a couple years ago.
Is that where he's living?
Yeah.
Out on the East?
Yeah, he's a teacher in Philly. He's a coach.
Really?
I mean, he was Matt Ryan's high school coach, which is, I mean, there's stories everywhere. And so he'll be back in town, you know. I mean, Tom Burke will be back in town.
Tom Burke.
There's one for him.
That'll be good to see
never
him.
End. Yeah,
oh my goodness.
Exactly.
He was an animal. Man, was
he was
good.
He was a dominant player. You know, I mean, we did, I think it was 2 years ago, we did a statistical analysis to try to begin like a data dive on football. You were part of this.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, the leader of that project thought Tom Burke's stats were a mistake. He thought that there's no way that could be true. And, you know, we had to reassure him that, no, it was actually true. But he was such a dynamic player. He's incredible.
So, side note, we had a debate on this podcast a couple of weeks ago about, okay, if you take Ron Dayne out of the discussion, mm-hmm. who's the best player in Wisconsin history? And you could make an argument for Tom Burke because of how dominant he was.
You could.
He was a name that came up. I mean, there's a lot of names. We're lucky that we have a lot of names.
Yeah, exactly.
But he was one. But he was as colorful off the field, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Or isn't he? Probably still is.
He probably still is. Yeah, he's probably isn't the right word. He is. You know, you think about like the just the difference in times 20 years ago to today, or almost, I mean, we were the class of 95, high school class, so we came here in fall of 95. So, I mean, we're pushing 25 years when we first arrived here. And I mean, that's in the pre-internet era.
Right. And no cell phones.
No cell phones. No social platforms.
No email even, really.
No. And so, you know, you think about, like, today the kids come here, they already have this bond and these friendships because they're communicating the way they do, the way they communicate now on their platforms. And they get here, they already have this foundation of a relationship started. But, you know, Tom Burke, I met him one time prior to arriving here at, like, our official visit. Otherwise, I would catch the occasional newspaper article on him. And, you know, he's from the middle of nowhere up north, Poplar, Wisconsin. And so, you know, maybe the Journal Sentinel, or at the time, Milwaukee Journal, it wasn't even the Journal Sentinel then. There was the Sentinel and the Journal. Maybe one of the two of them would run a story, a piece on the recruits or whatever, and do a piece on Tom. But, you know, you could count that on one hand. So I'll never forget, you know, we came in June of that year for the summer, which at the time wasn't the norm. That was coming, that was arriving early to campus the summer before the fall season. And we stayed at the Regent. And I will never forget coming down the stairs into the lobby of the Regent, and there's Tom Burke standing there at the front desk talking to whoever's working at the Regent. And he's wearing a cowboy hat, a tank top, and he's got this big skull tattooed on his, like, giant python arm. And he's wearing American flag Zubaz pants tucked into his cowboy boots. It's a hell of a look. And that was really my kind of that is what I think of as a, kind of my first impression of Tom Burke. And that's just how he, that's how Tom rolls. And that's who he is.
There's like this mystique that he came out of the North Woods for this 4 or 5 year period and then sort of retreated back, and no one has seen or heard from him since.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I saw him a little bit, you know, when I was playing in Seattle, he was with the Cardinals. I saw him a little bit there. And then there was a period of time when I just, you know, lost contact with him and until, you know, last few years. And actually, to Paul's credit, you know, Paul had made it a priority to kind of try to open it, but put his arms around the football alum and welcome them back in. And so, you know, you began to see guys that haven't been around in a long time kind of filter back through again. You know, Gibby was another one. Tom and Gibby, I saw maybe 5 years ago when Paul first came back. They were together, and that was a moment.
Yeah, I mean, Gibby was the guy that went that day. It was during spring practice, and it was sort of this mini reunion. Yeah. And Gibby's the guy that still stands out in that group, and you couldn't miss him.
You couldn't miss him, and he's only, you know, 75%,
right.
Less than 75% in terms of body weight of what he was then. He's down to, you know, 290, 295, which for him is, you know, he's cut.
What's ripped. He doing these days?
He's doing very well. He's down in Dallas, and I'm happy to report. You know, he's had a very public kind of struggle over the years with different aspects of the game and with his own health, and his eating was kind of out of control. It's been, I'm not saying anything that hasn't been well documented. And I'm happy to report, is doing very, very well. And really, what I think it comes down to is he ended up finding the right life partner. He married a woman that is the perfect person for him and kind of completes him. And he's doing great. He, you know, he started the business that he sold maybe a year and a half ago and did very well. And he's had some health challenges. I mean, this is only Aaron Gibson, these kind of stories. He got bit by a brown recluse spider, and which I didn't really know anything about.
We're not laughing because it's funny, but that's like,
I mean, it almost cost him his life. And so he spent like months and months in the hospital, and he's had all kinds of challenges. And but he, when I talk to him, his attitude is so positive. He's just got the best outlook on life because he's happy. I mean, he's genuinely happy. And so even in the face of some real serious adversity, he's never been better. Huh. So, you know, I'm fired up to see him this weekend because he just exudes this kind of positive energy that's contagious.
When you guys get together, what's one story you know will be retold and you guys will just laugh because you're either picking on somebody that, like, you remember when this guy did this, or or it'd be a great moment. They're like, remember how we beat Iowa?
There'll be, you know, it's interesting because, you know, like a big team, a football team, you know, call it 100 guys. It's more than 100 guys, but just for a round number. And so there's these pods of kids, and so it's a pod of kids by position group.
Sure, kids you came in with.
Yeah, recruiting class, roommates or dorm mates. You know, there were 12 of us in the end of Salary Hall as second at the time. We had to spend 2 years in the dorms. And so at the time, you spend 1 year in the dorms a freshman year, we're all kind of scattered about, random assignment. The second year, you get to pick your rooms. Sure. And so, you know, the last six rooms at the end of the hall were all football players, which is, in hindsight, not a good idea. but actually, of those 12 guys at the end of that hall, there were a bunch of guys that, after that season, that second year, left. Didn't make it. Huh. Didn't pan out. And, you know, so, you know, this is kind of a long way around. So there's a bunch of guys that came in that class of 95, that recruiting class, that aren't part of this reunion.
So they left right before you guys started winning titles.
Yeah. Which, I mean, if you think back on it, compare then to now, I've said recently, the best thing that could have possibly ever happened to me is that we went through adversity early on in my career here. So if you think about this class was the first recruiting class after the '94 Rose Bowl. Okay, so you know Barry already had in the stable that the '94 class.
Sure.
Okay, and so then he went out to recruit, and so this class is that first class that he was able to leverage a Rose Bowl victory.
Sure.
And but it didn't. Given some of the recent headlines and coaching changes and whatnot, think about this in today's context. You know, they win the 93 season's a magical season. They win the 94 Rose Bowl. The next season, the 94 season, is a disappointment. And, you know, Barry would say this, you know, they didn't handle the success of that Rose Bowl game the way, as well as they could have. The following year, 95, my freshman year, we don't go to a bowl game. And, I mean, think about that today, in today's context. The following year, 96, we've got to go to Hawaii and thoroughly beat up Hawaii just to get to a bowl game. We go to a Copper Bowl. The following year, 97, you know, we get bookended that season by a great Syracuse team, Donovan McNabb,
yeah.
And a great Georgia team, which until recently, like the last game we played, I thought maybe the most talented team I've ever seen us play. And, you know, that team was loaded. So we get crushed on both ends that season. And so that 4 year period and the first 3 years of my career and the guys that are on this list that are coming back this weekend, that's what we came up through. It wasn't stepping into this flywheel that had all this momentum behind it. It was like, oh, wait a second, humble. We're not just going to, this just doesn't just happen.
And in today's culture, Barry Alvarez might not have survived that stretch. I mean,
yeah.
Or there'd be
pressure at least.
Yeah.
You know, big
there
time.
Would be ridiculous pressure. I mean, there was pressure then, but in a different way. And it would be amplified today.
Yeah.
Sadly. I mean, I think that's one of the things that's kind of wrong with what's happening today is that, you know, there isn't patience. I mean, the Barry Alvarez story has a very happy ending because he was able to,
endure,
push through that, and he was given the opportunity to push through that. And I'd like to think that, you know, that's very much a part of our culture here at Wisconsin. Sure. But I think if you look around, you know, the college landscape, that's not always the case. So it's kind of interesting to think about.
So for turning the corner for this group going into '98, where does this famous "I didn't come here to play in the Outback Bowl, I came here to play in the Rose Bowl"? Where does that story factor in?
go back, tell us the whole story on that one. It's worth retelling.
Yeah, so, you know, we had just come back from, I mean, we got beat up against Georgia. I don't know, 30.
Mike Bobo, was he their quarterback?
Mike Bobo. I mean, they had, like,
yeah.
Hines Ward, Champ Bailey, Matt Stichcomb, Bobo. I mean, they had – it was a really talented team, and we were just outmatched. You know, they made a lot of that – a side note, they made a lot of that game going into it about, you know, the big, slow Big Ten against the quick, athletic
SEC. Where have I heard that before?
Yeah. Boy, some things never change.
Yeah, well, it was true that day, actually.
I just remember it was like a – it might have even been a 10 a.m. Central kickoff on New Year's Day.
Yeah, I was usually early.
I was barely awake for it, and then the game got out of control early, and I said, I might go back to bed.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't have blamed you. So, you know, we came off of that trip, and we went home for break, and we came back the next semester, and that's the kind of kickoff to winter conditioning. And Barry had a team meeting, with all the players and the coaches, and it was just kind of a housekeeping kind of meeting. You know, a little bit of, you know, set the tone for the winter. A lot about, you know, academics and just, you know, here, like, just housekeeping. And at the end of the meeting, he put to the team this opportunity, if anybody had anything to say or add, you know, now's your time. And there was this, like, kind of awkward silence. Everybody, like, just kind of looked down at their shoes, and I was not the personality to raise my hand, and I was not eager to jump up in front of my teammates and, you know, verbalize anything at that moment. I was going into my junior year, but I'd already started two seasons, and so I kind of had the equity of experience on my side, and it, you know, in hindsight, looking back on it, it just was a moment where somebody needed to say something. And so, you know, right at the last moment before Barry just kind of moved on and closed the meeting, I raised my hand, and which was, again, just a totally out of character. And I came up, you know, I stood before the team, and I asked everybody but the players to leave. So, you know, so Barry says, anybody got anything to add? I said, you know, and yeah, I do, but can you leave the room? And so they did. Everybody kind of cleared out, and we closed the door, and I kind of spent a minute talking about the Outback Bowl and the season that we had just had. And it was a tough season, you know, particularly for the O-line. I was the only returning starter. We had four new starters. You know, three redshirt freshmen on the inside who, you know, everybody turned out to be great players. You know, that was Gibby's first season at right tackle. And so we really took our lumps.
Who were the inside guys? Rabach, Ferrario,
and Costa. Yeah. Yeah. And so I kind of talked about that for a second. And I just put to the team, you know, who here had a great time at the Outback Bowl? And, you know, nobody really raised their hand to volunteer for that. And so, you know, that line, I said, you know, we signed on, that recruiting class signed on because of the Rose Bowl, because of the 94 Rose Bowl. And I'm not like too proud to say it. I don't know that I would have come here if there hadn't been a 94 Rose Bowl. And I've publicly given credit to Daryl Bevel for his run as the moment. I mean, I watched that game from the floor of my family room as a junior. And so that's what I wanted to buy. That's what I bought into. That's what I want. I wanted to be. I mean, Joe Panos grew up the next town over from me, and I watched Joe Panos through that 94 Rose Bowl, and I wanted that. And so that led to this moment where I stood up before the team and I said, I didn't come here to play in the Outback Bowl, because it was true. I didn't. I came here to win Rose Bowl. And I said to the team, you know, I look around, and you look around. I said, we've got enough talent in this room. I mean, the history validates this, but, you know, you got Ron Dayne sitting in the room, and you got Tom Burke sitting in the room, and you got Donnell Thompson. We got great players. Cecil Martin is in the room. They're players that Aaron Gibson, first rounder, and
Wendell Bryant.
Wendell Bryant wasn't there till I don't think till next year, till the 99.
But he was coming.
Yeah, yeah.
But Chris Chambers,
you know. And so I said, look around. I think we've got Like, and I
Fletcher,
stole
Eccles, man, that dude was loaded.
Yeah, there's some dudes in there. You know, Kalaji's in that room. Like, John Favreau. I mean, they're just guys. There are guys, Bobby Adamall. They're guys with a ton of heart. And everybody signed on for that same thing. So it wasn't like this bold. I wasn't saying anything that wasn't already believed or that hadn't already been bought into. But what I was basically doing in hindsight was I was stealing Joe Panos's Why Not Us?
Sure.
I mean, that was his 93. It was right. In a different way. I didn't even realize at the time, but Why Not Us? Look around, look left, look right. Why Not Us? And that was that, you know, it worked out. You know, it took me a long time to figure out, like, it worked out and that validated it. But really, you know, so the outcome kind of made it a great story. But, you know, there are a lot of games and, you know, there's overtime and there's all this, you know, challenge that took place. What it did is it solidified our, like, desire and our commitment. And so it started that day in winter conditioning. And, you know, Barry used to have this spring ball mentality, tough 15. Like, it was an accomplishment if you played or if you practiced in all 15 practices. It was so physical. And so then you got through that, and it took that tone. And summer conditioning took that tone. And then, you know, Barry actually had to tone it back when we got to the seminary because, you know, the team was so – had this unified – their sights were set on this Rose Bowl. And so, you know, we're calling it up after practice and, we're calling it up to this Rose Bowl. And, you know, I'm thinking of it from his perspective now as a coach. And wait a second, you guys just got killed last game you played, you got killed by Georgia and Rose Bowl. And I'm picturing, you know, I mean, Jeff Patricus is here at the time, you know, and what's he think of this? And so Barry, I think, wanted to kind of, you know, That's a private conversation in the locker room, in which this is kind of, you know, speaks to, you know, Barry's brilliance as a coach. Basically said to us, talk about kind of stoking the fire. He said, "You guys haven't earned the right to say that yet," and so you don't just get to say Rose Bowl at camp before the season. He goes, you know, you can say that after the season when you're actually going to the Rose Bowl, and which was kind of poking the bear a little bit. And it worked.
The other poke in the bear was being the worst team to ever play in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
I love all the stories about that. And then Barry's reaction after the game, what he said to me.
Yep. Yeah. You know, I mean, talk about I mean, that was the most perfect thing you could have said to this team.
For sure.
You know? And, and we played a team in UCLA that was disappointed to be in the Rose Bowl. You know, they played this rescheduled game against Miami. And if memory serves me, like, Edgerrin James runs all over them. There's a hurricane that, you know, caused them to have to reschedule the game. So they played it, whatever, Thanksgiving weekend or something like that. And they lost. I think it was their only loss. And so they've, you know, they're pissed because they got to play in the Rose Bowl, and we're thrilled. You know, we're coming. You know, and
it's a big trip for you guys, and for them, it's they're playing in their backyard.
Yeah.
And it's sort of a realization of what you had set out to do.
Yeah. So, you know, we had to do, like, every bowl game. You know, you got to go to these functions, and so we went to Universal Studios or something, or I don't remember where it was, and Barry had us so dialed in on this game. This was what he would refer to as the business trip. And so, you know, the fun comes after you take care of the business. And so, you know, we're at this whatever function it was, and I was sitting next to Bobby Adamoff, and we're sitting on a bench, a park bench at whatever theme park. And we were dialed into the game. We weren't even excited to be there. We were just kind of looking forward to the game. You know, a few days later, and Cade McNown walks by. It was one of those functions where both the teams are at, you know, their quarterback. And so we're just sitting there on the bench, and I'm sure we had this scowl on our face. And he walks by, and he looks at at me and Bobby, and he says to us, don't worry, guys, it won't be so bad. Like the game, like we'll take it easy on you. Wow. It won't be so bad. And, you know, so like there's, it was a different version of the Craig James worst team to ever play. Yeah. And like, whoa, wait a second. You know, like, you'll take it easy on us? Okay. And, you know, so that you know, didn't take long for word to spread in the locker room on that one. But, you know, that's a, you know, historically speaking, that's been a very comfortable place for us to play in that position. You yep. know, no yep. chance, nobody gives you, no odds. And that's, you know, you could go back and look at it. That's probably where some of the most memorable moments in the history of the program come from. That's a very comfortable place for us to be.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Somewhere we've thrived.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we're also this weekend kind of recognizing the anniversary of the Dane game.
Yep.
Right. That's famously yep. called that when he broke the rushing record against Iowa, who the yep. team plays this weekend. What's your lasting memory from that game?
Yeah. You know, a couple of them. One, you know, there's, you could, if you think, go back and think about everything that happened that day. So
the streaker?
Well, the streaker, that's a memory I'm still trying to get rid of. I mean, that one, I gave Ron a hug after he broke the record. And I turned around and the guy's right. 10 feet in front of me. I'll never be able to erase that from my memory. He'll never be able to erase the turf burn that he received. but, you know, you think about like so it's senior day, which is always, every year, that's a dynamic that is hard for a coach to manage because there's just all kinds of things going on, all kinds of emotion that isn't necessarily helpful to playing a clean game.
Sure.
You got this, you know, I think running, you'd know better, maybe less than 100 yards.
Yeah, just I think 99. Yeah, 99, yep.
So we got, and that was a team goal. Got to get them this, and you know we were way behind on that, and so we had to catch up kind of midseason. And so now you know we got to go out and do that, and you know win, and we're going to the Rose Bowl again. So you got that. You got to share the conference title, and oh wait a second, we're going to retire his number after the game,
right?
As well. I mean, think about everything that happened that day, and you couldn't, I mean, we couldn't script that today. I don't know if we could pull it off. Like, it's just yeah. so many things happened that day. But you know, I think I got paid the best compliment as a player that I was ever paid that day. And that is when, and I'll spare him from sharing his name, but a really good player on Iowa's defense, said to me after play, we ran a stretch play to the left side, to my side, and I pulled out and I ran up on him and I got him pretty good. And afterwards, after the play, I helped him up. And I knew him. And he said, dude, take it easy on us, please. And no one had ever said that. And, you know, and they, by the way, that wasn't their best team. We had played better Iowa teams years before, but I think it was Kirk's first year.
It was, yep.
Yeah. So, you know, they were rebuilding themselves, and we ran into them that day.
Broke their will.
Well, yeah, and they, you know, think about, I mean, everything I just described, how'd you like to come into, be the road team on a day like that? You know, it's like the worst, it's the perfect storm for them. So, you know, that would have been a hell of an upset had they been able to pull it off. They couldn't do it.
It would have ruined a lot of cool things.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right? I mean, that, yeah, talk about history that never would have been. Thankfully, that didn't happen. So, anyway, everything happened that day. And, you know, Ronnie, like, Ron's goal was a team goal. That was another great, I mean, in hindsight, like, that was a great coaching strategy. It wasn't just an offensive line goal. It wasn't just an offense goal. It was a team goal. It was a goal for the defense.
To get him that record?
Yeah. You know, the defense thought of it as got to get him back on the field. We got to get off the field. Everything pointed to that, which, you know, for us aligned perfectly because that was our game. It's not like we're a passing team and we're trying to do something that we're not. That's who we are
right.
or who we were.
Right, you're going to win if you can run the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we didn't have any other option.
Right.
You know? I mean, largely speaking, I mean, that's an over-exaggeration. No offense, Brooksy. But, you know, we had a hard time.
Dag Retzloff would take exception to that.
You know, John Sigmund's coming back this weekend. Yeah, you know, I mean, there's another one. I don't think I've seen him, you know, for almost 20 years.
But you couldn't have had a clearer identity.
No.
I mean, that
live
is.
Live and die. I mean, live and die right. by the sword. Yeah, that's what we were. And, you know, on occasion, it cost us, you know, but, you know, more times than not, it didn't.
But I'm fascinated by that idea that it was made a team goal.
Yeah.
So how personal was the record for you guys as his line? Like how much, it's Ron's record, but how much do you guys feel like it's your record too?
Yeah, it's not Ron's record, it's our record. And that's what we believed then and that's what we believe now. Because it was everything. It was the only, you know, so one of the kind of tenets of Barry's program was control, eliminate distractions and focus on what you can control. That was one of the, I mean, it's like, it's ingrained into everybody who was in that locker room then. That's a life lesson. And so we couldn't control if he was going to get the Heisman or not. But what we could control is if he was going to get that record or not. And we thought if he gets that record, then how can he be denied the Heisman? And so that's what that was everything. And we knew, you know, if we ran the ball, then that aligns with how we're going to win the game. Like that's not trying to be somebody that we're not. And so it was everything. Everybody was frothy. I mean, that line that season, I mean, that line was, you know, it was me, Billy, Casey, Dave, and
Tausch.
Yeah. A walk-on named Tausch. You know, like
Babyface Tauscher. That's how Ronnie called, that's what Ron said, right. Called him in the, you know, it's like, trophy speech.
Yeah. You know, and then, so you think about that. Think about that then and now, like, you know, I mean, Tausch is part of that same class, 95 class. We came in together. And so, you know, you think about how, with the benefit of perspective and looking back in history, how this all played out, you know, those five guys that season, and by the way, not to discredit the work of the previous three seasons that led to that culmination. And, you know, you're going back to guys in 96, Ronnie's freshman year, where it was me and four fifth-year seniors. You know, and so you got, you know, Jerry Wunsch, who was a great player, and Jamie Vanderbilt, and Derek Engler. These are all NFL guys. Manny Castro, he's no longer with us today, but, like, these are all great players that contribute, that owned part of that. So I think those guys, you know, shared in that day because that day is very much about who we are here at this program. It just is. And it's just symbolic of that. And I think it's paid dividends down the road because I think it has attracted talented players that want to be part of that. And I know it has because they've shared that with me. I mean, I've had this conversation with Joe Thomas, who, you know, came a few years later. And think about all the great running backs that have come through and all the great linemen, all the great players in general, but all the great players that have come here that have been attracted to this idea of being able to run the ball. And so, you know, it's just part of who we are.
Does it gnaw at you that Ron is not recognized as the all-time leading rusher?
Yeah, it does.
Me too. I can't get over it.
I can't either. And
it doesn't make sense, first of all.
It doesn't make sense. You know, I've read the comments that the NCAA has had about, you know, said about it. And I get, you know, at some point you have to make a change if you're going to, you know, try to account for yardage in a more modern way. But I don't understand how you make that change shortly after such a historic, you know, point in time where that record was broken and you just deny it.
And you can't go back retroactively when you have the stats? Like, that's what doesn't make sense to me.
And I think now we're in a very different world in 2019 than we were in 2002 in terms of accessing information, too. Like, going back and being able to find all those old numbers is much easier now than it was 17 years ago when this change was made, so.
Yep. You know, I've seen, you know, and you know, I just read an article earlier this week. You know, it cuts both ways. You know, I think the point they made was, you know, I think it was like about Monte Ball's touchdown.
Yeah, it was about
record.
Barry Sanders' 88 season. Yeah. I mean, his bowl stats aren't counted, and that helps Monte tie his touchdown record in 2011.
So, you know, I mean, that's all part of it. But I think when you think of a record like the all-time rushing, NCAA all-time
that's
rushing
hallowed.
Record. Yeah. Yeah. That doesn't sit right. I'm sure there'll be
that's
a lot of conversation
weekend.
About that this weekend. And I'm sure there'll be some really, as the night goes on, some really intelligent comments made about that. But, you know, that no, it doesn't sit right. And you know, I've seen, you know, Ron has been more vocal on that than he's been about anything.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, you know, back to, is it Ron's goal or is it our goal? The brilliance of Ron then was he made it our goal. And Ron being who he is, you know, Ron is an introvert, and he's not, he never was, and he still isn't, like, the limelight guy. And so the brilliance of what he did then was he deflected all of the praise and the accolades and the success that he had towards the five guys that blocked for him. And you talk about a good life lesson, like, you know, in whatever, life or business or whatever, like, share the success, share the praise. And, you know, that just made a group of guys who don't get noticed unless they screw up. It gave them a little something extra. And, you know, that turned out to be a good deal.
And if you ask the more recent guys, what advice has Ron given them, Jonathan or Melvin Gordon or Corey Clement? You know, what has Ron told you guys for advice?
Yeah.
Give all the credit to your offensive line. Thank the guys up front. Make
love
them
your line.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. I mean, that's still where his head's at.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very simple strategy, but it's brilliant. It doesn't have to be complicated.
We could spend hours talking about those 99-2000 teams.
By the way, Ron, like another outspot. How about him calling out Ricky Williams?
Yeah.
And Tony Dorsett.
Right.
That was pretty
great. At the Walter camp, right?
Yeah. That was pretty great.
And that's totally out of character.
Right.
But if you talk about setting the tone,
you're
going to
come when I break the record.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, we're not going to just let him hang out there. We got to get this done.
Because he said that before his senior year started.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
As a matter of fact, I'm going to do it.
So when I break your record, you'll be there, right?
Yeah. That was uncharacteristic of Ron, kind of the program. But,
sure.
You know, I mean, the only other guy that could get away with that was Fletch. And, you know, I mean, because Fletch did a lot of talking. It was part of his game.
Yeah, yeah, he did it. Yep.
That was one of those moments in college that I later came to realize is the difference when I played at Seattle. But, like, Fletch was a pro player in college. And so, you know, I think it was when he did some yapping before the 98 Purdue game. You know,
the Drew Brees game. The jump-around game.
The jump-around game. Right, I mean, there's another. Yeah, right? And you know, so he did a lot. He gave a lot of headlines, and you know, usually Barry would, and that was not something that Barry liked. And but afterwards, you know, the day after Sunday, we had the team meeting, and Barry just, you know, said to the team, if you're gonna put that out there, you got to back it up. And Fletch backed it up. Fletch always backed it up.
His undressing of Plaxico Burress in that game will forever be one of my favorite memories.
Yeah.
I mean, Plaxico Burress was terrific and 8 inches taller than him.
Yeah.
And he just
took
him out of the game entirely, mentally, everything. Oh, that was awesome.
That was another one of those games, like, as part of the journey in 99. You know, they came in, they were allowing, like, less than 50 yards a game rushing. And so it was this kind of clash of two teams that didn't have any margin for error. I don't recall offhand what they were ranked, but they were a highly ranked team. And they had great players. Julian Peterson, linebacker, he played forever. I mean, they had Robert Smith, Plaxico Burress. I mean, they had great players. They were stacked. And, you know, and Nick Saban's their coach, and, you know, Barry's doing what Barry, you know, I think that was the game Barry said, you know, we're going to probe with the running game. Like, we're just going to try it out. Like, that's kind of a, I mean, talk about a, bluff, like a veiled bluff. Like, what else are you going to do? You know, but you know, we needed that one, and that was a monumental step along the way.
All right, let's talk about a couple topics of what you're doing now. Let's mm-hmm. look at, so now you're the deputy athletic director for Wisconsin Athletics.
Yeah.
In a minute, how would you explain what your job is here at UW?
Yeah. So, you know, you could think of, like, my role is to make sure the day-to-day of our athletic department works. And, you know, in a practical sense, I make sure that what lands on Barry's desk keeps Barry happy. So make sure everything is running smoothly. And
the same thing when you were a player, basically.
Yeah, kind of, you know, maybe the role hasn't changed that much. I love it. I've always loved what I've done. But not in this same way. And I didn't know that when I came back here. I didn't know what it would be like, but you know, this place, whatever, it's just in my DNA. It's part of who I am. It's so much played a part in determining who I would become and what I believe. And, you know, these lessons that I talk about, you know, from our team are, I mean, like every guy that's coming back this weekend could rattle those off because it just shaped who we all became. So it had such an impact on who I am. And it's not, you know, the winning the Rose Bowls and everything, like those are bonus. You know, it took me a while to figure out that actually the achievement of that, it was great, but that's kind of gravy. It was in the process, it was in that meeting that day before winter conditioning. It was in, frankly, some of the more humbling moments. It was in the 95 season of not going to a Rose Bowl that really – and having the, you know, claw back from that. It was in the halftime at Ohio State, you know, down in the season. You know, we had these really high aspirations, sure. And the season's gone. It's slipping through
back
our fingers.
Back-to-back losses, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and everything else, you know, the whole experience here, that it's just so much responsible for who I am today. It's so much affected how I parent my kids, what my kids think is possible for them is so much shaped by because of my experience here. It just opens up, you know, a world of possibility. Why not us? I mean, like all these things. Well, you know, I mean, you know, my kids are young and they're bright and they're healthy kids and they got these huge aspirational goals. They're like reaching for things that when I think back on it, you know, when I was a eighth grader or a sophomore in high school, the ceiling on what I thought the world could be was so much lower than what my kids see. And it's because of this experience here. And so when I come back here now and in the role I'm in here now, it's so easy for me to just kind of pour myself into this because it's so much a part of who I am.
So this is an interesting time to be an administrator in college athletics.
And it is. Yeah.
Most notably what the recent news has been of the name, image, and likeness mm-hmm. and what the NCAA's reaction will be to that.
Yep.
Can you shed light on what your viewpoint is of that whole that whole idea of benefiting off your name, image, and likeness?
Yeah.
And then also what you forecast this looking like?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, it's a dynamic period of time to be in college athletics. It just is. For whether it's name, image, and likeness or one of many other kind of, you know, developments, if you will. And I think it really is forcing us both individually, institution by institution, across the board, nationally, the NCAA or by conference, to really think about what it is that we're doing here. What is our purpose? What are we doing? And so, you know, at Wisconsin and in the Big Ten and many other places, not limited to that, you know, we've got this belief that we develop young people, and it's not just limited to winning Rose Bowls, you know, like we're talking about today. And I mean, it's the irony here is I just shared what it meant to me as a person. And
sure.
So, I mean, that's what we're in the business of doing. And we do it very well, and we do it by on a championship level. But, you know, name, image, and likeness is one of those topics that is really forcing everyone to question, what are we about?
Right.
And it's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out nationally, by conference, by institution. I think there are a lot of folks that are, and we are clearly in this camp. We will be, we've always been supportive of providing to our athletes to the fullest extent possible, the level of support that we can. And this is, you know, we've demonstrated this historically, whether it's cost of attendance or, you know, fully supporting our sports or deregulation of meals and so on and so forth, right on down the list. And this is another one of those where we'll be supportive of what's put forth, but the playing field has to be a level one. And I think what you're seeing now and what concerns us is the inconsistency of a state-by-state approach.
Sure.
You know, and you know, so you saw California pass a bill, and there are other states that are probably not far behind, and you know that presents a challenge in terms of consistency across. Think about it. I think there's 11 states represented in the Big Ten, and then you think about all the games we play outside of the state lines. South Dakota last night, and, you know, and so how do you navigate that world? And so it really points to a national solution, and that national solution is, you know, it's going to beg that same question. What are we doing? What are we here to do? And I think we're here, and I think, you know, many of our peers in our conference and beyond would agree. We're here to, I mean, our sport, our programs are tied to education in the United States. And it's unique to the United States. If you go to Europe, they're not. You go anywhere else in the world, they're not. And so that's who we are. And to the extent that name, image, and likeness or any other issue that is bound to come up can align with that and not take us down a path where we are pro sport or pro sport light, then if we can pull it off, then I think we'd be fully supportive of that. But it's got to be aligned with who we are and what we do.
Yeah, I mean that makes a lot of sense, and I don't know what the model is.
Yeah,
but
I think we're going to find out in 2020. The NCAA put forth some guidelines that are going to shape the direction this goes over 2020.
Yeah,
and so, you know, a year from now, I'd like to think that we're going to be sitting here with a lot better idea of how this looks, and whether you know it's going to cut it or not. I don't know. We'll see. But there's a lot of unknowns right now.
I mean, you referenced it too. The landscape since you played has changed a lot in this in this world.
Yeah.
What's something you think that has been done or something that we've done here that you're particularly proud of for getting rolling?
You know, I'll tell you this. So in the simplest terms, if you think about it, so we have this history and tradition of whatever the sport is, on field, on court, competitive excellence, that's established. And we've got this academic excellence of the university, and we perform well. Our kids perform well in that arena. When I was here in the late 90s, those were the two arenas. That was it. And now, you know, we've got this third prong within the athletic department of this investment into the human being that's not the student, that's not the athlete. And, you know, I mean, let's face it, our kids come to us today, they arrive here with a different set of circumstances than I did that day when I ran into Tom Burke at the Regent, you know, where we're just reading a couple newspaper articles and, you know, the amount of information, the amount of criticism, the amount of praise, the specialization, all these things, we've got a whole team of people that have dedicated their careers to developing young people off the field and out of the classroom. And, you know, and that's not an easy task. And, you know, that's, so that's teaching them best practices on social media, and it's teaching them, you know, things like
career development,
and, you know,
mental health. That's become a big thing these days.
Yeah.
And probably always should have been.
I mean, the list goes on and on. And the goal here is that it culminates, if a young man or woman comes through our program and spends 4 or 5 years here, the goal is that we send them off on a trajectory that they wouldn't have been able to capture had they not. And so, culminates with meaningful job opportunities for our graduates. And, that's not unrelated to the question you just asked me about name, image, and likeness. That's what we're doing. Yeah. That's what we're in the business of doing. And we do it. It's made possible by championships that we win. And by the way, I don't want to diminish winning. It was very important to win a couple Rose Bowls. And it's important to win championships because that's very much a part of the experience.
Sure.
It was also important, from my own experience, that we went through some tough times as well. And we learned how to persevere, and you develop this level of resilience. Those are all things that are experiences that serve one for a lifetime.
But to that end, you guys aren't getting together this weekend if you didn't win those Rose Bowls.
Yeah.
The reunion is not happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
You think about it, there's no reunion for the 1995 team.
Right.
So that's a part of it too. Like that's where the winning championships adds to that, who you are, your identity, your DNA.
But the building of the relationships too is what also brings people back. Yeah, the reunion is happening because there was this event and you won the championship, but you guys aren't coming back because you won the Rose Bowl. You're coming back to see each other. You're coming back to rekindle those relationships.
Yeah. That's not unique to these two teams. That's the friendships and the bonds that you develop with your teammates, whether you win or not, like that, that's something that always stays with you. This gives us an occasion.
This gives you matching polos.
Yeah.
Yeah. winning offers an opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does. Well, regardless, have an awesome time.
Yeah, thank you.
We should have you on next week to tell the stories from what happened this weekend is what we should do. That's
maybe that sounds like a good idea.
Bonus episode.
maybe 20 years down the line.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Have a great time. Have a great time. You guys deserve it.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks to Chris McIntosh for that lengthy but fascinating conversation. We could have had that interview last for 2 hours. What else is going on in Wisconsin athletics, Brian?
Big weekend for cross country at the Big Ten Championships last weekend. The men won their 50th Big Ten title. McBurn's lads took
50 championships.
50. That's amazing. Yes, the next highest total is Indiana and Michigan State both have 14. So so congrats to the Badgers for winning yet again. Ollie Hoare took the individual title, and the Badgers actually swept the individual titles because on the women's side, Alicia Munson repeated as Big Ten champion. So huge congrats to them for a great weekend.
Wisconsin volleyball also kept their perfect Big Ten record in play. They sweeps over Maryland and Indiana. Program best 12-0 start to conference play.
Wrestling, starting the season ranked in the top 10, goes out and beats Army, Navy, and Fresno State. Oh, and they did it on the deck of an aircraft carrier in San Diego.
Yeah, time out. Wrestling's kind of a niche sport, so people may not even know that this happened. If you are unfamiliar with what we're talking about, just Google Battle on the Midway Wrestling, and look at some of the pictures from it. The scenics are awesome.
Unbelievable.
Outdoor wrestling on an aircraft carrier in the bay off of San Diego.
Sunset going down in
just
the background.
Yeah. Really cool. And the story actually is interesting how this thing even came about. A friend of mine who is the promoter has been putting this together, and this was the third annual one, and he gave me a call one day and just said, hey, we want Wisconsin to wrestle in this thing. I'd never even heard of it. I don't pay attention to wrestling, and I didn't know that they wrestle on aircraft carriers. And
or ships
said,
of any kind, really.
He said, we want to increase the exposure of our event. We know Wisconsin is really good, and we want to have you guys. And I was like, okay. So I went and talked to Chris Bono, the wrestling coach, and said, hey, coach, have you ever heard of this thing, this battle on the Midway? And he's like, oh, yeah, it's on an aircraft carrier. That thing's awesome. I was like, well, do you guys want to be a part of it? Because a buddy of mine's putting it together and he wants you guys. Yeah, 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 we're in. And
it's a great impression, by the way.
I was about to say, that was pretty spot on.
And the rest is history, and they got to wrestle on aircraft carrier, and they won 3 matches. So it was, all things were great. It was a great success. Everything's coming up Wisconsin. All right. Thanks for checking out our podcast. It's going to be a huge weekend in Wisconsin athletics this weekend. Want to see you out at the Kohl Center. Want to see you out at Camp Randall. Remember, if you're coming Friday for the basketball game, try and get there a little bit early for the more family recognition. And then Saturday, there's only 2 home games left at Camp Randall, so we got to get that place rocking. We got to get this football team back to its winning ways. We'll see you there, 3:00 at Camp Randall.
Unless we get fired.
Thank you for listening to Behind the Badgers. Please subscribe, rate, and review on your preferred podcast platform. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation.